we're on Kuf Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph, and we were in the middle of discussing the two brises, the two dinim, one at the brisa, one in the Mishnah, regarding two people by the name of Yosef ben Shimon that live in the same town. And the question over here is whether they are able to bring suit with a document in their name against a third party. Is that Yaakov?
Yes,
sir. Fine. Let's leave the door open. Good. So we were wondering what the machlokas was. Now, initially we thought that the machlokas, lechora, would have to be the question of whether otiyot are niknot b'misira. So if you hold that the fact that a person has a shtar that was given to him by somebody else is sufficient for him to use it to collect, meaning otiyot niknot b'misira, meaning that even though a shtar is not a physical thing, but the giving over of the paper of the shtar is sufficient to transfer the meaning of the shtar, so then there'd be no problem, because then the individual who is in possession of the shtar is able to go ahead and to use it to sue the person who's the borrower that's in the shtar. If you hold that he cannot give it, use it but when it was given to him, so then the fact that he's in possession of it, even though we're trying to say that we're not fascist, that Nifila is an issue. In other words, that it just so happened that the guy, Yosef ben Shimon, dropped his contract, and the other Yosef ben Shimon picked up his contract. That's crazy. But even so, it could be that his possession of the document, even legally, doesn't provide him any rights. Because who's to say that the document was properly transferred to him? So if you hold that, then he wouldn't be able, neither of them would be able to sue, because the borrower could always sign it. Of course, we would only do this if the borrower did sign it. The borrower could always sign it. You're not the guy that I borrowed the money from. So how do I know that this document is yours to sue me with? So if he'll try to say, maybe it fell, that we won't accept, according to the shot that we're now holding. But if they'll say, maybe he gave it to you, and in giving it to you, there was no proper transfer, because you can't use it to sue me. That, yes. That was one possibility. The other possibility we said was that maybe everybody is made, that otiyot are niknot b'misira. And the question over here is whether you have to bring a raya when you're in possession of something, that the reason that you're in possession of it was that it was given to you or sold to you to sue with, and not stam that you were asked to keep it as a pikadon or so on. And as we explained yesterday, the question revolves around the issue as to whether the concept of chazaka on a piece of paper makes any sense. Because the piece of paper as a paper doesn't really mean anything. Is it possible to say, I have a chazaka on the right to collect something? I mean, where is that right? In what sense is it in your rishus? So the fact that you have a vehicle in your rishus is not sufficient to give the normal dinim of chazaka metal to it. Because over here, the things that you want are not yet in your hands b'chlal. So that's the shaila. If you have to bring a raya, it's because he holds that my holding a shtar isn't proof that I have it for the right reason. It's fine. This is where we were up to. And we had just mentioned the machlokas Abaya and Rava about this issue, which is one third of the way down in the along the length of the daf. The Yitma, Otiyot Iknot B'misira, so here we have both Abaya and Rava agreeing that otiyot are niknot b'misira. And if, in fact, he had been given this for purposes of collection, it would have been usable. The machlokas between Abaya and Rava is, according to Abaya, you have to bring proof that it was indeed given to you. And according to Rava, ainot zarich lavi raya. Omer Abaya mino aminala. Says Abaya, I want to be able to prove to you that I'm right, and that the possession of a document is not sufficient. You have to be able to show that it was given to you in order to collect. The Tanya. Echad min ha'achim she'ashtar chov yotzei mitachat yado. Alav la'viraya. Here it says that if you have a number of brothers that inherited an estate, one of them presents a bond that was part of the estate, and he's claiming that his brothers gave him the bond, that he could use it to collect, or that his father, before he died, gave him the bond, whatever he's claiming. And it says over here, he has to bring proof that it came into his hands in order to collect. So, I mean, l'chora, my love, who are din l'achrini? I mean, this is an example of a brother, but it doesn't seem that it would be any different if it was someone else. I mean, the fact is that possession of a shtar doesn't mean that it was transferred to you in order to be able to collect with it. Maybe you were asked to keep it. The Rav Amar, Rav says, that you want to bring a riot from? Shaynei Achim, Deshamtu Mi'adad. The case over there is unique, as Richie will testify. When brothers get into situations, they tend to grab things from one another. So if they inherit an estate, and one of them will take something and then claim it was given to him and so on, and therefore, there you need to bring a riot. But in a normal case, where somebody presents a shtar, the guy's saying, how do I know it was given to you to collect? He can't say, how do you know? It's in my hands. I'm a bullseye. Can't you have to assume that I have a right to collect with it? As a matter of fact, there's even another lashon according to which Rava used the bride's riot in against the buyer. Ika the Amri Amar Rava, that Rava said, I can prove to you that you don't have to bring a proof that you have a shtar to collect with. Minoav, where can I show you? V'tanya echad min ha'achim she'ashtar chov yotzei mitachat yado. Alav la'viraya. It says in the Brisa that if one of the brothers in his state presents a shtar, then he has to prove how he got that shtar. Now, isn't it clear that it's only achim, it's only this unique case of brothers that generally are shamtu mi'adadi? One of them will try grabbing his piece of the action in the estate. In other words, we're not normally choshish that a guy on the street is a ganes, but he's going to grab somebody else. But brothers, they have lots of rationalizations why this was meant to go to him, and the other brothers will never give me my chalak anyway, I'm going to try to grab what I can get, whatever it is. They're used to being in the estate working with stuff together. So Mimela, it tells us that in this case, because of those rationalizations and easy access to stealing the things after the father dies, and because of that, olav la viraya avalachrini. But in a normal case, if somebody presents a shtar, so then look, then you can't insist that he prove that he has the shtar correctly to collect it. So it's a raya against Abaye, according to this lashon. And according to this lashon, Abaye answers no. It means even Achim. Why do I need to say it by Achim? Because Achim is Trichalai. See, I need to know that even Achim need to bring proof. Because Salkadatashamina, I might have thought that even the Shamtu Me'adade, since brothers generally are pretty sneaky in grabbing a piece of the action from one another, grab. So make to get out of the way and then take it for themselves. So Ema Mizdarza hear it. You might think that they're super duper careful about the other brothers. And if a brother managed to get away with an actual contract, then he must have a good legal basis for having it, because otherwise it would have had alarms all over the place as soon as the father died in order to make sure that the other ones don't steal. So Kamash Malan, that's why it's coming to tell us that even brothers, where they've got alarms out and they're on the lookout for a brother trying to get it, that nonetheless, you still have to bring a raya. So I might have thought, even the champion of the enemies, there is a yirei v'lotzrich, halavi raya. I might think the very fact that everyone's on guard would mean you don't have to bring a raya. Kamash mama. Okay, so we have two different approaches. Each approach, we also have a way out of. Now, the question is that we have yet a third shita about the two Yosef and Shimons. The third shita says like this. Here is yet another brisa that argues with our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says they certainly can't sue each other, because we have no way of knowing who is the lender and who is the borrower. But Yerubraisa says, in the same way that they can sue a third person, they're able to sue each other. So how, what is the machlokas between the Braisa and our Mishnah? For my kamiflegin, because v'im shtar lelovet, apapeni she'ein malve imo kamiflegin. They're arguing as to whether it is permissible to write a shtar for a borrower, even though there's no lender. So our Tana holds, which is the normal halach we've seen until now, kotvim shtar lelove, afapi she'ein malveimo. Why not? We write a shtar to a borrower, he wants to be in a position where if he manages to sucker a guy into lending him money, he's going to be able to give him a shtar on the spot so the guy can't use it as a way out. Say, well, you know, I don't lend money without a contract. Well, I just happen to have a contract all signed, ready to be delivered to you. So fine. I mean, it's the only one who stands to lose is the hopeful borrower. If he's ready to have a shtar written around that claims he owes money, that's his problem. So why shouldn't we give it to him? But the problem in this case is that if we do give it to him, what's going to happen? He's going to go to a sofer. He's going to be also the sofer. And he'll go to witnesses. And he'll say, you know, I'd like to borrow money from Yosef and Shimon, my dear friend. So he writes that, I, the undersigned, do owe money to Yosef ben Shimon. And he gets the witnesses to sign on it. The problem is, he then goes to Yosef ben Shimon and he says, look, it says over here that I lent you money. You gave this to me. So, therefore, we can never allow him, any Yosef ben Shimon, to sue another Yosef ben Shimon because he might have been in possession of what was supposed to be the borrower's copy and he's pretending to be the lender, Yosef ben Shimon. So we can't allow them to sue each other. Masha'in came, the Tana of the Braisa apparently holds. Let's just see that inside. Also the Gabi Safet Vasad, if I'm the keys for the shtar, the Bina Lamez, the Yosef ben Shimon Chaviri, I want a shtar that says I owe money to my dear friend Yosef ben Shimon, because he's going to lend me some money. And then he goes to Yosef ben Shimon, the Chapman way, the Chapman, after they write it and sign it for him, the Kitla, he takes it, and he goes to Yosef ben Shimon, his erstwhile friend. The Amale Havli Meaz is if he has up, you know, where's $100 you borrowed from me? Here's the contract. Whereas Tana Brasa, the Tana of the Brasa holds, ain't kotvim shtar lelove achie malve imo. We will not write a shtar because of this very problem, unless the malve is with him. And since he's in possession of the shtar, both of them were there, so now we know that they're going to be zohir about that shtar. Then the Mishnah continues on to say, "Nimtza ve'achad bein shtarotav, shtarot shel Yosef ben Shimon parua, shtarot shneihem pruim." Now, if we find among someone's documents, let's say heirs find in their father's documents a shoga, or a loan from Yosef ben Shimon, without it saying which Yosef ben Shimon, and he's got two bonds against Yosef ben Shimon. Now, we are going to have to assume, says the Mishnah, that both of them are paid, because we don't know which one is paid, and you're Yodo Zala Tachtonam, and you're going to have to prove which one still owes you money. Now, of course, the problem with this is that the Mishnah earlier said that you can't use a bond against Yosef and Shimon anyway, if there's two Yosef and Shimon's in town. So what's the difference if there's a shofar or there's not a shofar? Since you can never prove which Yosef and Shimon it is, what good is the bond against Yosef and Shimon, even if there hadn't been a shofar? So the Mishnah is a contradiction. Because here, Taima the Nimsa, over here, the Mishnah is saying the only reason you can't collect is because we found a shofar between his documents. Hello, Nimsa. But if we hadn't found such a shofar, Motsi Mopik, you would be able to sue with the bonds, you would have been able to sue Yosef and Shimon? Banan! Did we not read, quote, the lo acher yacholo si aleihem shtar chov, unquote, now? Did it not say in the Mishnah earlier that a third party, and this man now is the third party, cannot use a contract against either Yosef ben Shimon? So how do we understand the Mishnah that says now that it's the receipt? That's the issue. By the way, normally the existence of a receipt in someone's shtarot is absolutely meaningless. Because he may have written the receipt and never given it to the guy. I mean, after all, what's doing in his shtarot? It should have been in the borrower's shtarot. So the very fact that we found it here is grounds to believe that he was hopeful that the man was going to pay him and he had a receipt ready to give him, but the man never paid him. So why should we worry about the receipt? Now, Lamaisa, the Gemara, we had this Gemara. And the Gemara came out that the only time that we have to be choshish for such a thing is if we find a receipt in his ripped documents drawer, where he keeps a record of his old documents that had been used. So then, exactly, his cancel check drawer. So what is the receipt doing in there? There we have to assume that he wrote the receipt. The guy forgot to take the receipt from him, never bothered him again, and it was left, which happens very often. In order that it should be clear that it actually had been paid, he puts it in his page drawer. So if it's found in the page drawer, then we really do have to assume that it was a receipt that had been used already. Fine, but anyway, we have a contradiction in our Mishnah. First, the Mishnah says you cannot use a bond against Yosef ben Shimon. And then the Mishnah says the only reason you can't use a bond against Yosef ben Shimon is because we found a receipt in the drawer. Anyway, he wouldn't have been able to collect it. Answers the Gemara, b'mishulashi. It's talking about that Yosef ben Shimon was listed over here with one generation further. Yosef ben Shimon ben Yaakov. The other one's name was Yosef ben Shimon ben Naphtali. So there's no reason why we wouldn't have been able to collect the loan. Oh, indeed. Then why don't we look at the receipt a little bit more closely? Which Yosef ben Shimon is on the receipt? Obviously, it's talking about a case where the Shtarot had three generations, but the Shover only listed Yosef ben Shimon, which is pretty stupid. So now he's got Yosef ben Shimon, he's got a valid contract that he would have been able to use against either Yosef ben Shimon, but bonded, he's got a Tavra that says that some Yosef ben Shimon, now he doesn't know which one. So he can't use either. He doesn't know if he's using an illegal contract to sue Yosef ben Shimon. Abaye says, you know, you misunderstand the whole Mishnah. The Mishnah is not talking about a case where the lender's contracts were found to have a shtar, a shover, receipt about Yosef ben Shimon's debt. Hokikama, what the Mishnah was saying was that nimtza lelove ben shtarotav, if the borrower has a receipt that says Shtaro shel Yosef ben Shimon alai parua, that Yosef ben Shimon's loan against me is parua, then both Yosef ben Shimon's shtarot against this guy are parua, because they have to prove that it wasn't the Tavra for their loans. Ketzad yasu, so what shall be done in a case like this where there's two people and they want to do business without running into this problem? Yishaleshu. They should write the third generation in the shtar. By the way, there's a whole tshuva by Reb Moshe about the value of using family names today in order to avoid exactly this issue in normal shtarot. So now the Mishnah says, and what about if they both have the same grandpa? So then you should write a simon. And if they both are the same, and you say the shorter, they're not, no one's shorter, no one's taller, and so on, what do you do then? Well, then you write HaKohen. And what about HaYushneim Kohanim? What if both of them were Kohanim? Yiktavu Dorot. You should write them as many generations as necessary to distinguish between them. Somewhere or other, they are different people, and they had to have had some different name of a father up there. And so, Mamela, when you reach that stage, you could stop writing. It's interesting that the Kohen was listed all the way down towards the bottom.
It's profession as well, the
tanner. Yeah, right, that would be a simon. But Kohen is listed even after simon. I don't know, maybe there was a chashash that people would know that he was a Kohen, that the other one could be mostly ashamed that he was a Kohen, and it's not so easily checked as these other issues. You can't become taller if you're shorter, or shorter if you're taller. but people manage to become a Kohen when they're not. Okay, so Rabbi Josh, you're on.
This is the Heidegger Mishnah.
Ha'omer livno, shtar ben shtarotai paruach. Somebody who is buying and he says to his son, don't trust all those contracts you'll find in my drawer. One of them has been paid. It was the one. Bad news. Right? What happens now? So, if any of the Aizahu, he's got a big problem over here. Because now we have to assume that they're all now. Over here, of course, father's actually coming clean. And he says, look, I don't want you guys collecting with the shtar. I don't remember anymore which one. The lova said I could keep the shtar, but I can't remember. So I don't want to be punished after death. You guys making money on my burning soul. So Mamela, they cannot collect.
On any of them,
yeah. Now, suppose one of them, one of the borrowers, had borrowed twice. And there's two contracts against him. Now, the father had said only that a single contract was paid. Now, over there, if you have Nimsal Echad Sham Shnayim, Hagadol Parua, you'll have to assume that the larger contract was paid because he didn't say which one. But certainly not two contracts were paid, so you can use this lesser contract. You see? The lesser contract to collect, Hakatan Eino Parua.
And so that means all the others you can collect on. Right. Only yeah. In the case
of the... No, the others you can't collect at all.
Oh,
he doesn't know. He knows one contract. He doesn't know it's the contract from the guy, this guy. But I'm saying, even if it is the contract from this guy, you can still collect one of them. Amar Rava, Shtar Lecha B'yadi Parua, Hagadol Parua, Vakatan Eino Parua. If over here the brother is coming to define the difference between the word shtar and chov. So if the man says, well, one of those shtarot, yes, is parua, and then, being as we don't know which one, so we have to assume the gadol is parua, not the katan. But if he says chov lacha biyadi parua, shtarot kulam pruim, because how do we know that there isn't a debt? He's referring to the total debt, and the total debt may consist of various smaller amounts that were written up in contracts to cover that debt. But there's actually a large debt, and how many contracts there are to repay, they're all parua. That's crazy. I mean, what if a guy would say, my field is sold to you? So we would assume it was his bigger field? I mean, we assume it's his lesser field. And then, if he would say, so, Sadeh Gedola Mechuralo, Sadeh Sheyeshli Mechuralacha, Kosadotav Mechurimu? And if he says, my Sadeh, this word Sadeh is used in the sense of property, not a field. It's like the Rashbam brings the Dugma of Sadeh Esav. You know, that area. It's like a Lashon of Bika. It's a French word that he uses, a campana, that's supposed to have that same sense, which is like a bika in the Laze Rashi. So would we say the same thing? That it means everything that he's gotten is over here. He said chov, so it means, since it's chov, it means all of the money with all of the contracts. He says, brother, hey man, I said, b'yad balash tal, atakpana, what's the matter with you? Who's been motzi from whom over here? You're trying to use a contract. You're trying to use a contract, and you have to prove that that isn't what's meant. If a guy is trying to take from you a sada, then he's going to be the one that has to prove which sada you did mean. This is opposite ideas. So enochinami, both are consistent with the same idea. Yad balashtar la taksona, always. It's the guy who wants to come now to collect his loans, he has to prove that it wasn't the loan that was meant. The guy who now wants to collect the property, of course, he's going to have to prove, and the most he can prove is that's the smallest possible sugar, so that's all that he can prove. He's got to prove what was meant. Somebody who lends money based on a guarantor, wow, lo yifra min haaretz. He can't get his money back from the guarantor.
Yeah, didn't learn that at the bank.
Yeah.
Now, actually, in the end, the Mishnah is going to turn out to mean he can't go directly after the guarantor. But we're assuming that it means what it says. He can't be paid, he can't demand to be paid by the guarantor. The imam al manache Ephraim mimisha eretzeh, if he says that I am doing this loan on condition that I can sue whoever I want, then Yifram and Arev, then he can sue the Arev, the guarantor, for the money. Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Im yesh nechasim lo veh, ben kach u ben kach lo Yifram and Arev. If the borrower himself owns real estate, then even if he specified that I have to be able to go after the guarantor, he can't go after the guarantor. Again, this will all be clarified in the Gemara. V'chein haya Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel omer, and so too did Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel say, that ha'arev li'isha b'ktuvata, if somebody had been a guarantor for the ktuvah of a woman, v'haya ba'ala migarsha, and now her husband was divorcing her, now what we're afraid of is that that woman is going to go after the Arev, collect the Ksuva, and go back to Honey Bunch after having collected all of this yummy Ksuva and get remarried. And people do this for lesser reasons, like green cards and stuff, right? So, therefore, says Reb Shimon ben Gamliel, since she can sue the Arev, we have to be choshesh for knunya between the husband and wife. Yadirena hana'a, he would have to make a neder al da'at rabim that he can't be mefer, that he will never be mena from her. He should be able to be mazir, his wife, again to share the spoils, and because otherwise shema yasu kinunya on the chasim shozeh, maybe they'll figure out a way to get money out of the arev, and then yachzir tishto, then he'll get remarried. The guy won't have a leg to stand on. Says the Gemara, what do you mean you can't collect from the Arev? Well, what's the, so my taima, what would be the meaning for that? Because at this point we think that it really means you can't collect from the Arev at all. Meaning that there's no din of Arvut. Rabba Rav Yosef, Damrit Arvayu, the meaning is that an Arev does not guarantee the loan. The Arev guarantees the lender. So therefore, the guy says, look, Gavra Ashlimatli, you handed me over responsibility on this guy, okay? Gavra Ashlimilacha, I present you with your borrower. Now you can do with him as you wish. But the only thing that an Arev would be there for is that if the guy runs away, and you can come to the Arev and say, hey, you said this guy's a trustworthy guy, now you're responsible. Or if the guy dies, you know, you said the guy was going to be there for me. I mean, this is your responsibility. And so then you can collect. But if the guy is there, doesn't have money, I never said that I would take his place. Ask you for Rav Nachman. Says Rav Nachman, that's absurd. High din of the parsoi. That kind of din, not to collect from the Arev, that's like the Persians done. Now, we thought at this point that he means literally that that's how the Persians treat Arvut, which is not true. The Persians actually treat Arvut as being a first recourse, not even a similar recourse, because he comes before even the lender, at least the borrower. So how could Rav Nachman have said that? Therefore, the Gemara asks, Adarav. What do you mean? That's called Dina de Parsoi? Bota Arva Asli, if anything. I mean, it's the opposite. They hold that you go after the Arev even if the Lova has real estate and is ready to pay, you go after the Arev. So how could you call that Dina de Parsoi? No. He means Elaki Dina de Parsoi. It's like we often use Dina de Parsoi as a way of talking about things that don't make sense. This is Persian law. So this is like Dina de Parsoi, the Loyalty, time of a Nilsayah. Yeah, exactly. So how many persons does it take to collect from an owner? So that's what he meant to say. That this is well, you're every time in the middle side. When you make a ruling like that, not to collect from an owner, that's like the Persians would do to say something without seichel. El Amr of Nachman, the Nachman said the meaning of the Mishnah is not you don't collect from an Arev. My lo yifram an Arev lo yidba Arev tichila. Means you can't go first after the Arev. Tanya nami hachi. And that indeed we have a brisa that says, al malve et chaveiro ayidei Arev lo yidba Arev tichila. You can't go after the Arev first. You have to try to get the money from the borrower. The ima mar al menache efrad mimisha eretzeh. If he said that I'm making the loan on conviction that I can go after either party, so then fine, then he can go after the Arev Tehillah. So that would be the meaning in our Mishnah as well, that Imam Ma'amanachef Rami Misha Ersen. So that makes good sense from Nachman's point. Omer Ravuna, Minayin La'Arev Mishta'abed. Where do we get this din that an Orev is mishta'abed by agreeing to be a guarantor? I mean, there's no mechanism, there's no particular contract that the guy signs or kinyanim that he makes to become an Orev. Well, we find it in the Torah. Dechsiv onochi a'arvenu miyadi etivachenu. We find that Yehuda guarantees Binyamin, and Yaakov seems to say that that's a reasonable kind of thing, and that it wasn't just words be alma, even though there was nothing that was drawn up between them, right? But he says, fine, okay, so take him. Ask it for a chisda. What do you mean? Kablonusi. That's not orei. That's kablonut. Now, kablonut is a sug of guarantee that is more powerful than a normal orei. What creates kablanut, we're going to see a little bit later. But one thing is for sure, that if you yourself were involved in the transferring, and it gives the money is given through you, or will you say tain love, that's considered to be kablanut. And since over here it says tna oto al yadi v'ani ashivenu, the lashon of tna oto is always a lashon of kablanut, not of arvut. And over there, fine. Even those who may disagree about elements of our root certainly agree that kablanut is binding even to collect from the kachilas. We call it orev kablan and so on. Now this is a little bit strange because this pasuk is the pasuk that Reuven said. In other words, we seem to be getting mixed up between Reuven's guarantee, which Yaakov didn't accept, and Yehuda's guarantee, which he did accept. And the guarantee by Reuven to say that it was kablanut is all very nice, but it wasn't accepted anyway. But the lashon of tno to ayadi was never said by Yehuda. So why would we ask from the story of Reuven to the story of Yehuda? I mean, unless we say, which is the way some explain it, that it doesn't make sense that Yehuda would have offered less than Reuven's previously rejected position, right?
He's building on it.
So if he said that, okay, you can rely on. Okay, but still, maybe it was together the acceptance of Reuven's original offer. So this doesn't prove that a normal guarantee is sufficient. It only proves that a kablan is efficient. No, okay, fine, but the mode by which it was offered was not. Hello, I'm Rav Yitzchak Mihacha. The truth is that it's from the following. It says in the pasuk, "Lekach bigdo kiarav zar ubaad no kriyah chavleu." Take his cloak off his back. The guy was dumb enough to go ahead and be a guarantor to some stranger, and for someone unrelated, go and take it from him. The Omer, furthermore, another pasuk, Shlomo HaMelech didn't seem to like this arvut business in Mishlei. Bani, imarata l'rayecha, you're stupid enough to go guarantee your friend's loan. Tatata l'zar kapecha, you put a handshake for a stranger. No kashta be imre picha. Now you've gotten trapped with your own stupid words. No karata be imre picha. Now you're in jail. Asei zote fo benivi inatzel. You've got only one way out of this. You can't try to attack the concept, because unfortunately it works. But since kibata bekafriyacha, leich hitrapes. Go ahead and open up that wallet. Rahav re'echa. Turn your friend into a rahav, into a raj, into a majesty, into a king. So we dash this like this. So what's the lechi prapes? Imamon yeshlo biyadcha. If it's money that you owe him, well, don't try to fight it. Hakerlo pisat yad. Just open your wallet wide and pay it up, and just don't do it again. The imlav, and if it's something stupid that you said, so then rahav we're dashing a lotion of harbe. Here ba alav reim. Send lots of friends. This, of course, is the mocker that you have to send people to be mavakesh mechila. So here ba alav reim to be mavakesh mechila for what you did, and till he forgives you. Omar Amemar, Arev de Mishta Abed. Amemar says, look, an Arev is no different than any other Esmach arrangement. So it's really dependent on the Machlokas review, the Rav Yossi that we had before, about whether Esmach Zakanya. That was the case we had in the earlier Mishnah, where somebody says to an escrow that if I don't pay up the debt by such and such a date, then you can return the escrow contract to the lender, which allows him to now be sued for the full amount of the contract. And that was a machlokas between Rabbi and Rabbi Yossi. So Rabbi Yossi, according to Rabbi Yossi, who said that the escrow company has a right to return the contract, he holds us machlokanya. So according to him, the fact that you committed yourself, although you were thinking, of course, that, well, I mean, the guy's probably going to pay back the loan himself. Okay, but he didn't. So it's machlokanya. So the Arav is mishtahabe. According to Rabbi Yehuda, the Arav is machlokanya. But if you hold according to Rabbi Yehuda, where a guy's assuming something else is going to happen, he over there in that case in the Mishnah, he thought that he was going to be paying up that debt within 30 days, didn't realize things would go badly for him. So over here, if you hold that that's not a reason to return a contract, over here an Arev wouldn't be Mishtabe. Omri Ravashi, Ramemar, Ravashi said to Ramemar, come on, man, that doesn't make any sense. Hamasim b'chayim, and it runs against daily experience. We have day-to-day cases in court where we don't collect on an esmachta, as we pass an esmachta lokani, unless it was made in front of a bezin choshev and so on, right? So we have meisim b'chol yom that esmachta is lokani, and nonetheless, we always collect from arvim. So there's got to be another mechanism here that goes beyond esmachta for an arev, otherwise, I mean, we're being very inconsistent. Elam Ravashi. Ravashi says this is not a standard asmachta. Be'ahu hana'a dekame hemen le gomar umishta'abed nafshe. The point over here is that since in this particular case the lender relies on the orev, so with that hana'a that he is viewed as someone that people are actually willing on his word to take out money and give it to someone, he is willing to put himself into that situation because it offers him various psychological benefits. I mean, he wants it. Yeah, it's a real... The truth is there's different ways of understanding this, and the different ways make tremendous maps to mean as la'aloch in terms of this relationship to the previous subject of esmachos. Where does it really come from? Are we really being somech on the Yehuda issue, or are we being somech on esmachta, which means that in cases where we wouldn't have this particular reason to believe it, then it wouldn't work. But the pashtus, we're saying that it really is esmachta, except that it's an esmachta ki'ilu was in front of a bezin choshev. However, there is another way to look at it, which is, since the person was being somech on him, it's as if he was the one who was borrowing. So he becomes now the borrower, because I never would have taken this money out if not for you. So I'm giving it through you, essentially. So it's to you I give it, and then through you to the other guy. All right. We continued.